Hundreds of people turned out for a demonstration Thursday night at Pacifica National Board member John Murdoch's law firm, Epstein, Becker & Green, which is on the AFL-CIO's list of most union-busting firms. Murdoch himself represents HMOs. Protesters decried what they call a rightward shift in the nation's oldest progressive radio network. The demonstration was touched off by the dismissal of WBAI General Manager Valerie Von Issler. The vast majority of WBAI staff refused to support Van Issler's removal, saying it defied process and that staff should be consulted in personnel decisions. The decision was officially announced on the air on Friday morning's wake-up call show in a report to The Listener with Van Issler, program director Bernard White, and other senior staff members who asked listeners to remain calm and see how the situation unfolded. On Monday, listeners, staff, and community members held the fifth in a series of meetings on the situation around Pacifica and WBAI. The meeting, which was recommended repeatedly on the air as an outlet for listeners' fears and concerns, brought out about 400 people. Tension was high in the room. When program director Bernard White spoke, he informed attendees that he and the rest of WBAI management had sent a memo to Bessie Wash the previous Thursday once the decision had been finalized. White's memo requested a meeting with Wash immediately to discuss the attempted removal. Although Wash granted a meeting for that Saturday in New York, White did not think the negotiations were successful.
She refused to reverse the action. She said that she wasn't going to do that and that someone would be in on Monday, that Valerie Van Issler would have to train until December the 31st.
According to White, Pacifica's proposed actions at WBAI did not correspond to the success of the general manager's impact on the station.
This comes on the heels of a unique time in BAI's history, where we came in with a balanced budget, having in October the largest October fundraiser in the history of WBAI, and possibly in the history of public radio.
The memo to Wash from WBAI management stated that Pacifica's proposed action was in contradiction to a recent management statement promising responsiveness, dialogue, and better communications. It accused Pacifica of compromising the hard-earned goodwill that WBAI had reestablished with its listeners. After last year's three-week lockout at the network's first station, KPFA, in Berkeley, the memo stated, many lost faith in Pacifica, which took an obvious toll on WBAI's membership and income. Democracy Now! Host Amy Goodman, also speaking at the meeting, recalled last year's events in Berkeley when General Manager Nicole Sawaya was removed from her position by Pacifica. This action led to the arrest of staff and the closing of the station for 3 weeks. If the listeners allow this action to happen at WBAI, Goodman said, chances are we have lost the station forever.
And they marched down the streets of Berkeley, more than 15,000 people, and said, this voice will continue, the microphones will remain open. And so, in that sense, it was a tremendous victory for community radio. And tonight we say the same thing. We are yours, you are us, we are you, and the only way we're going to survive is by doing it together.
Michael Ratner, a lawyer with the Center for Constitutional Rights, has consulted with a number of Pacifica employees who believe they have been wrongfully terminated or harassed by management. Dan Coughlin, former Pacifica National Network News Director, was removed from his position after writing a headline about an affiliate's boycott of Pacifica last year. Ratner is also a consultant lawyer on the case of Amy Goodman, who has filed harassment and censorship charges against Pacifica management. Ratner, who is also consulting on Van Issler's case with Pacifica, says that the removal of Van Issler is demonstrative of a much larger issue with Pacifica, where a move to the center and changes in the national board combine with their disregard for personnel process. Even major corporations, Ratner says, do not treat their employees as badly as Pacifica does.
On the most immediate level, they're trying to push out people who aren't utterly loyal to them. And on a deeper level, they're trying to change the place politically. I think there's an attempt to move it toward not to the right, but to the center, Democratic with a capital D.
Van Issler has filed an appeal of the termination with the Pacifica National Board. Pacifica has 5 days to respond, but as of Tuesday, Pacifica Executive Director Bessie Wash was unaware of the appeal. Several calls to Wash's assistant at Pacifica Publicity were not returned. For Free Speech Radio News, this is Miranda Kennedy in New York.
And that report by Miranda Kennedy, produced for broadcast on KPFA and other stations, which take Free Speech Radio News last Friday. Free Speech Radio News has started by the Pacifica Stringers, who have been on strike since last April against Pacifica over the issue of censorship, the dismissal of Dan Coughlin as news director, the forced removal of Verna Avery Brown, and other events. And for this hour, we're going to discuss this latest ramification in the future of Pacifica, the potential fate of community radio. Joining us on the telephone from New York, from the WBAI newsroom, in fact, is Robert Knight, longtime producer of programs and newscaster at WBAI. Robert Knight goes back, in my memory at least, to the Contragate productions of the mid-1980s, but he probably was there even before that. When did you start at WBAI, Robert?
In 1978.
Okay. You're a relative kid compared to me. I started at 69 at KPFA, but 22 years is plenty to know where the bodies are buried and continued to fall. Thanks for joining us today, Robert.
Well, it's great to be in such a nice place as your living room.
Living room was the old program. This is Sunday Salon.
Oh, well, I like that, too.
Thank you, Robert Knight. Robert Knight now does the morning news on WBAI. Also joining us is Sherry Gendelman. She is here in our KPFA studio. She is chair of the KPFA Local Advisory Board. Sherry is a labor rights attorney, longtime civil rights activist, and has chaired the Local Advisory Board here at KPFA since...
Oh, I'm chair for the last 3 years, Larry. Actually, yeah, 2.5 years.
And is that why you have those scars and that blood coming out of every pore?
I'm telling you, some of the things I'm going to need are really rest and relaxation and maybe some heart replacement surgery.
Uh-huh. Well, you have a very, very strong heart, Sherry, and because of you and everybody else on the Local Advisory Board and the thousands, tens of thousands of listeners, really, we're still able to survive here and discuss this dire circumstance on the air. Robert Knight, we here at KPFA thought it should have been apparent to everybody else in the system that you guys were next, because you're the only free speech Pacifica station left. The Houston station has been turned into a country western jukebox, led by two minions of Pacifica, one of whom came out here and tried to shut this place down, Garland Ganter, the manager. The Washington station has become a jukebox with very little public affairs, never did have a functioning news department, and it now has become the jazz museum type of format, largely music. Los Angeles station is in a tiny clique and cabal of liberal Democrats. Dissident liberal Democrats. The only two stations that sound anything like what Pacifica stations have traditionally sounded like are KPFA and WBAI. And everybody out here just kind of wondered when they'd come after you guys and how. And now they have, in a two-pronged assault. One, the attempt to censor and perhaps get rid of Democracy Now!, which we've talked about. That happened a few weeks ago. And then the startling removal of your 10-year station manager. But the circumstances are not the same. They never are, historically, when two things happen that seem similar. Our station manager here, who was fired precipitously, had only been here 1 year, Nicole Sawaya, and was universally respected and loved by those of us here. And that's why we were so shocked and outraged when she was summarily dismissed. Your station manager wasn't universally respected and loved. The staff didn't like her in many cases, in most cases. She had been complicit with Pacifica in implementing what happened to us out here and certainly didn't protest it. And therefore, we were surprised that they would remove somebody like that, but not surprised at how they did it. Tell us a little about how that came down and what's going on now.
Well, I don't find that surprising because I think the complexities of leadership here are a bit deeper than the obvious. But it may help, I think, to examine the chronology of what happened, and that may indicate what is happening. It began almost 2 weeks ago when Bessie Wash came to New York. And
Bessie Wash is the executive director of Pacifica, who succeeded Lynn Chadwick, who was appointed, I must say, to succeed Lynn Chadwick without a hiring process, just someday appeared. Okay, go ahead.
Yes. And on Wednesday of that week, Valerie Van Isler received a memo from Bessie Wash threatening her dismissal if she did not accept mandatory reassignment to Washington, where she would be working under the direct supervision of National Program Director Stephen Yasko, who I think you may know and love from the efforts to impose the new regime on Democracy Now!, taped programs 3 days in advance, and so on.
And who comes out of NPR and actually has had no prior on-air or in-station radio experience whatsoever, but has a particular mentality, as Larry said before, that is with a big D, Democratic.
And a 10-year marketing executive for National Public Radio, Steve Yasko, again, now our new national program director. But go ahead, Robert.
Well, he serves at the pleasure of Bessie Walsh. He is also the target of a gender discrimination complaint by Democracy Now! Anchor Amy Goodman. So that is where Bessie Walsh had at first, in a genial, collegial way, asked Valerie Van Isler to consider such a reassignment. Now, Valerie Van Isler did not accept the reassignment, and then on Wednesday, Bessie Walsh started playing hardball. She, in a memorandum that was delivered by Messenger, indicated to Valerie that she was to have been terminated as of Monday last. That would be Monday, 6 days ago. And that on that day, a new so-called interim manager would be appearing at the station to take over the duties and to engage in a transition and takeover process. Now, no such manager, interim person appeared. However, it later became clear what had happened. In a tumultuous staff meeting on Tuesday of last week, it was revealed by a member of our staff that he had had dinner with Bessie Walsh on the preceding Monday. The following day, Tuesday, as a result of that meeting, he was invited to become the new interim manager at WBAI. He assented to that plan on Tuesday, and significantly, following that Tuesday, the very next day, is when Bessie Walsh went into hardball mode with Valerie Van Isler.
What did that person, that man who accepted the job as WBAI manager, what had he been told about Valerie Van Isler?
Well, that man was an internal member of the WBAI staff.
I understand.
He said that he was told by Bessie that Valerie was already a goner. He said that he was misled by Bessie Walsh, that he did not realize that his accepting the position would enable the firing that he said that he believed had already taken place. When I asked him whether he had asked Valerie if that had taken place, he said no, he did not.
So has he now consented? Does he continue to consent to be manager, or after the staff meeting did he change his mind?
Well, in the staff meeting, it was the unanimous consensus of everyone involved that no one here should cooperate with Pacifica's insistence upon installing new management here at WBAI at this critical time. Now, the person who accepted and then a few days later withdrew from that position was telling us during that meeting that he felt that Bessie Walsh really wanted to change things and make them better. He said that he believed, after he was offered the job, that Bessie Walsh really was unhappy with the national news regime as it is now. There was no discussion of redress or grievance in regard to Verna Avery Brown or Dan Coughlin. He said he said nothing of the attacks that had been simultaneous on Democracy Now!, which was under the same leadership with Stephen Yasko and Bessie Walsh. So there was a most perplexing assessment of Pacifica's intentions by the individual who was offered the manager's job.
Now, in the report we just played before you came on, Robert Knight, of Free Speech Radio News, they mentioned that there had been numerous community meetings in New York. And after that report was made, I understand there was an even larger one Thursday night in front of the offices of the firm of John Murdoch, who is now handling legal matters for Pacifica. He was one of of Mary Frances Berry's appointees to the national board. He's an attorney in Washington, D.C., with a law firm that incredibly boasts on its website of helping to maintain union-free environments in workplaces. Sherry Gendelman, what about John Murdoch and his role in
Larry,
all of this?
Larry, may I just interject?
Sure.
That event was magnificent. It was a shot in the arm for populist organizing and for defense of autonomy, self-rule, local rule at WBAI. imagine on the north end of Grand Central Station with all the magnificent sculptures, blocks full of people, hundreds of people with creative protest, including pennies inside recycled soda cans that became noisemakers when the police thought that the situation was petering out. Even they were charmed by the size and activity of the crowd protesting Murdoch.
400 or 500 people turned out on a bitterly cold night in New York on very short notice. So you're building the kind of movement in New York that you're absolutely going to need among your listeners, because it's really the only thing that saved us out here at KPFA is a listener and community movement. Sherry Gendelman, just to get to John Murdoch, this is a man who was appointed by Bessie Wash to the board, now seems to be leading things. By Mary Frances Berry.
Right.
Keep saying that. And who represents, is a member, a partner in this law firm, and has now...
And the law firm, I want to point out, specializes in defending HMOs against patient complaints and to make sure that they can deliver the least quality service in medical care for the highest return on their investments. This is his history. That's his specialty. Also for avoiding certain of the requirements of Disability Act and other things. Mr. Murdoch was brought on by Mary Frances Berry. He's a power player in Washington, D.C., and his law firm has interjected itself into much of the litigation that's going on now. They have come in as second counsel on the local advisory board suit. They are
that's the one that you're a party to.
Yes, it is.
Pacifica saying that they illegally took away the ability of local advisory boards to put people in the national board.
That's correct. It eliminated the input and participation of the community from community radio. The Murdoch firm is also participating now in the two other ongoing lawsuits. The one, the Attorney General lawsuit, filed out here by Carol Spooner and other people initiated from the North Bay of California, and the other lawsuit where two members currently sitting on the governing board have sued the board for illegal practices as well. So the Murdoch law firm is involved in all of that. Now, I understand motions have been filed to exclude that law firm because of the inherent conflict of interest of a sitting member of the governing board representing the governing board. Also, I would say that many of us believe that a lot of this activity, trying to get rid of Democracy Now!, destabilizing the two most powerful stations, are certainly heading down a very smart path that Pacifica has taken so that they can sell these stations. They're very valuable, between $200 and $400 million. Should the Murdoch firm be involved in that, they would reap a huge commission on that sale.
It's Sherry Gendelman of the KPFA Local Advisory Board, Robert Knight in New York. We'll be right back on Sunday Salon. Here live on KPFA's Sunday Salon. I'm Larry Bensky on KPFA and RadioForChange.com, joined by Robert Knight, the morning newscaster on WBAI, longtime program producer there of public affairs and news programs. Sherry Gendelman, head of KPFA's local advisory board, who's here with us in the studio. As I mentioned earlier during a break, we are going to have a special ceremony this coming Wednesday, but it's at 7 o'clock, not 7:30. It's at 7 o'clock at the North Berkeley Senior Center, where the local advisory board recently elected will be installed, inaugurated, blessed, pushed forward.
Gosh, I hope we're blessed. And it's going to be, I just want to say, it is going to be an opportunity once again for us and the community to thank each other for our shared efforts that have kept KPFA on the air, alive and vibrant. And those groups will include Ella Baker, Friends of Free Speech, the Ad Hoc Committee, 50th Anniversary, South Bay, North Bay, the CDP, and all of those wonderful people in Camp KPFA. Our representatives I have invited on the governing board, Pete Bramson, Tomas Moran, the Stringers, and we also want to thank our legislative committee in California, which has given us extraordinary support in our struggle.
So new New York people who are listening, and we're now joined also by Eileen Sutton, who's a volunteer in the Cape, in the WBAI News Department, and who's been one of the stalwart organizers and communicators around the, PNN freelance worker strike. You have to take over from here, Eileen. I don't have any voice left, apparently, suddenly. Welcome, Eileen Sutton.
Thank you very much, Larry. It's a pleasure. Hi, Robert. Hi, Sherry.
Hi.
Greetings.
I'm glad Sherry read that list just now to the two of you, because it's just a few of the dozens of groups that organized themselves out here and came forth to support us in our struggle, without whom we wouldn't still be on the air or even approximately in a position to fight. And you're going to have to go through something like the same process in New York. There are going to be a lot of people that come up, a lot of groups, a lot of organizations. How do you see that, Eileen? Is this just the beginning for you there? And do you really think you have time to fight this, or does Pacifica have something more quick and sinister in mind for you?
I think the point that Robert made, that the, you know, just the gloriousness of the demonstration on Wednesday night, which came together really quickly, I'm hoping is a kind of a bellwether of what we can expect from the New York listening audience. I think that strategically, seeing some of the ruthlessness with how Pacifica has behaved in the past, I actually think that this first volley at New York, or actually the second volley, actually the, I think the volley at Amy failed in large measure, and I think the volley, the second volley aimed at the station in regard to Valerie has also failed in the sense that they came in to take her out. They haven't yet taken her out. And the city is now beginning to galvanize itself, or be galvanized by the efforts of the staff. I think that, you know, even in the, oftentimes in the corporate world, when people are fired, people, you know, higher ups come in, the person is fired, they're literally often escorted out of the building and someone is installed. I think Pacifica made, some serious tactical errors here, insofar as they came in. They actually had the strange audacity to ask Valerie to train her replacement for a month, which was really almost surreal for me in terms of labor practice. But more to the point, I think that they also counted on the mixed feelings about Valerie to work in their favor. This is my assessment. And to your point, Larry, that yes, there was a very big difference between how Nicole was viewed and from what I understand, really beloved in Berkeley, and how Valerie has had a very mixed performance. I think that they expected a lot of folks here at the station to and the surrounding the supporting audience to accept her being replaced because she's engendered a lot of negative feeling amongst some. I think what's happened is quite the opposite. I think that in a very short period of time, on the air and off the air, we are bringing the New York listenership up to speed and impressing upon people the importance of rallying around not so much Valerie, but the issue of home rule and autonomy and independence for this station. And Amy came and spoke the other night at the community meeting, and Bernard spoke eloquently. And I think people really understand what's at stake in New York. And I think
we now have Bernard prepared to speak eloquently right here. Eileen Sutton, I understand he's joined us. Bernard White, are you with us, Bernard?
Yes, I am.
Welcome.
Bernard White is the program director of WBAI in New York. Before that, for many years, how many, Bernard, you were co-host of the morning show?
Well, for 10 years.
10 years. It was for a while it was White and Knight with the news. White Nights, along with Amy Goodman, a great entertaining and wonderfully informative morning show that I used to catch every time I was in New York. And then Bernard, last year was elevated to program director status. Bernard, how would you evaluate what's going on there right now? It seems like you've had something of the same reaction that we had out here, which was a certain measure of internal solidarity. We didn't really become completely united here until we got kicked off the air into the streets when everybody suddenly realized, hey, they're really serious. So many volunteers work in these stations and aren't, you know, in touch with the day-to-day operations and have seen craziness go on for years of one sort or another. But you guys should know out there from what happened to us what may be coming next. Do you think that consciousness has now been brought to the forefront?
Well, it seems that there are a majority of people that understand that, and that there are a handful of people whose decision-making has been clouded by their dislike for the station manager. But we're getting ready to have a very, very important meeting this Tuesday where we're going to try and deal with all of those issues, particularly whatever internal issues we may have. Because
is that a staff meeting or a community meeting?
It's going to be both. The first half is going to be a report to the community from a variety of different people who've been directly involved in this for a long time. Two people from the national board, plus
Beth Lyons and Leslie Kagan,
yes,
who have been quite wonderful and very strong and focused in their efforts to protect the network.
Yes,
go ahead.
So they're going to be at the meeting. Plus, the lawyer who was working with Amy around her situation with Democracy Now.
Michael Ratner.
Plus, Mimi Rosenberg will be there. You know, so that people can be told exactly what's at stake here and who it is we're dealing with. Because it is a very, very serious matter, and I don't know if everyone recognizes just how serious. Well, I know that everyone doesn't recognize just how serious it is.
But the points that Mimi Rosenberg makes, and I was at a conference with her last weekend, as a matter of fact, in Madison, Wisconsin, wasn't about this, but there was a little workshop on this there. Mimi Rosenberg has an excellent and detailed analysis of who these people are who are on the Pacifica board now, and they're corporatist people who are in a position to profit personally and corporately from any sale or lease or whatever they want to do with the frequencies in Berkeley and New York, which are on commercial frequency sharing.
Yes, that's quite true. John Murdoch and company, Bertram Lee, who has a history of buying and selling radio stations under the guise, actually, of setting them up as stations that will be purchased under certain minority considerations. Oftentimes, as in Boston, it appears that the station was then transferred to the hands of not minority, not people from the minority community, but actually the majority corporatist white community. There are other people on the board that are simply out of touch. They do not have a political history that is in any way in sync with the history, the lush and proud history of Pacifica, and we have to get rid of them.
Yeah, I think one of the things...
Bernard, we're going to take a brief break here. We'll come back with you and Robert Knight and Eileen Sutton when we return here on Sunday Salon on KPFA. Stay tuned. We'll also take your phone calls. And I want to remind listeners once again that at the North Berkeley Citizen Center, this Senior Citizen Center, it's called the North Berkeley Senior Center, corner of Hearst and Martin Luther King, this Wednesday night at 7 o'clock, we are going to have the installation of our elected local advisory board, people elected from the community, 11 of them, 4 people elected from our staff. Sherry Gendelman, still chair of that board, is here with us this morning. We're going to have an installation ceremony, huge rounds of applause and cheers, and then they're going to, I hope, forge unity among themselves, and one of the first things they ought to think about doing is electing a liaison person or two with New York, because this is bigger than us here in California. We've proved that. And we're going to have to outreach to all signal areas. There's been efforts made already to do that. But in any case, please continue to visit our website where we update the WBAI situation as well. www.savepacifica.net. www.savepacifica.net. There's information on there about ongoing demonstrations against Epstein Baker, John Murdoch's law firm, which continue here in the Bay Area, as well as New York and other places where they have offices. We have a campaign going on, spearheaded by Media Alliance here in Northern California, to get rid of two of the more egregiously inappropriate board members, Michael Palmer, the real estate developer from Houston, and John Murdoch, the corporate attorney from Washington, D.C. www.savepacifica.net. And when we come back, we'll talk more with Bernard White, Robert Knight, and Eileen Sutton. Stay tuned here on Sunday Salon. We're here for another half hour. And we are back here on Sunday Salon with Robert Knight of WBAI News, Bernard White, the New York WBAI program director, and Eileen Sutton, who has been very active, one of the leaders of the Stringer strike as a volunteer reporter at WBAI. Bernard White, you were saying something before we took that break.
Yeah, I think one of the things that this has pointed out is that we, and I'm talking about those people who are on the air, those people who work at the station, we talk about it, but I don't think we have really viewed ourselves as the protectors of Lou Hill's vision. And as a result, we hadn't been paying for years attention to the national board, this the thing was, as long as they weren't bothering us, then that was fine, and we could continue to do what we do on the air. But I think that this points out that we have to be constantly vigilant about who is on this national board, because we've allowed people to get on the board who do not share this vision at all. In fact, their worldview is the antithesis of this vision, and now we have to do everything we can to get them off and get some people on there who do share that view.
Bernard White, Eileen Sutton, we're going to have to let you go because in order to take phone-ins here, technically, we've never had that wonderful resource that you guys have had for so many years that Bob Fass uses on Radio Unnameable. Is he still on the air there?
Yes, he is.
Yes, he is.
He's able to take about 20 calls simultaneously and get a whole screaming chorus of voices going. It's wonderful at midnight. We don't have that here. We can only get two on the air remotely at the same time. But Eileen, before you go, I wanted to get you to talk for a second about the stringers strike and where it is. It's started last April. Virtually all of the key voices who contributed to Pacifica Network News withdrew their services when Dan Coughlin was removed as news director and Verna Avery Brown forced out in a censorship move to stop them from reporting on what was going on in Pacifica. When every other news organization on the planet was reporting on Pacifica, we weren't allowed to. And as a result, we have the pathetic product that is now the Pacifica Network News, which they continue to put out at great expense to listeners. Very, very poor and useless newscast, in my opinion.
Pacifica is giving it a lot of credit.
Pacifica is giving it a lot of credit.
No, he said Pacifica is giving.
Oh, Pacifica is giving it a lot of credit.
We actually refer to it as the Pacifica National News.
National News. Eileen, what's going on with the stringers?
Well, just one slight correction, Larry. We actually struck on January 31, so we're coming up to almost a year. The strike is still in effect. It's been extremely successful in galvanizing extraordinary support across the country. Thousands of people in unions and various community organizations support the strike, continue to boycott PNN and to honor the strike line. We now are proud to say that a beautiful constellation of 41 affiliate stations are carrying carrying Free Speech Radio News in place of PNN on Fridays when they get the program, and we think that it's really been one of the most important acts of resistance in the struggle to save the network and. Especially because it gets under the radar of Pacifica's censorship. So whenever stuff has happened, at least up to this point, now fortunately BAI is able to broadcast more information about Pacifica, but up till now it's been one conduit of information for folks across the country in terms of the struggle.
Well, how do you keep it? Are you able to keep that going for very much longer? Because I know most of you are volunteers, and where are you getting your money from?
Well, the nation has been extremely generous, and we hope the nation will continue to be generous. Right now, we're in a bit of a financial crisis, and I'd like to make an appeal for contribution. If we're not able to raise some money pretty quickly, we may have to go off the air at the end of December, and we'd like to see that not happen. So if folks can give donations, large amounts are certainly welcomed, and small amounts, even every dime, will be put to very good use. And you can get the address is rather long, Larry, so I'd like to give out a phone number and a website if I could.
Sure.
The website is www.savepacifica.net/strike, and on that site you can find all the information you would need to give a donation. And if you don't have a computer, you're welcome to call area code 718-707-7189. That's area code 718-707-7189, and it'll give you all the information for mailing a donation.
And Eileen, this is Sherry Gentleman, and I would like to emphasize that very, very early on in this struggle, the stringers, who are young and very energetic and focused reporters, could tell the difference between right and wrong. It took an enormously courageous stand in opposition to Pacifica. And I think that they are deserving of contributions from all of us and all of our support. And I really salute you and your bravery in this entire struggle.
Again, that telephone number is 718-707-7189.
Right.
Is that correct? Thanks, Eileen Sutton, for joining us.
Thanks, Larry, so much.
Right. Robert Knight and Bernard White will stay with us for the rest of this hour, and we're going to go to our telephones. Ray in San Francisco is our first caller. I want to remind our listeners we have a toll-free number, wherever you may be listening to this station on the web or in Northern and Central California, 1-800-958-9008. Hi, Ray.
Hey, good morning. You know, it is appealing to see this as an endeavor to achieve alignment with Democratic Big D centrism as one of the voices in the current message mix currently, you know, that cartridge that we hear played, states. But when there is this plan to stifle dissent, it denies a voice to some of those that are present in the communities hereabouts in order to achieve some career objectives of some administrators, then I don't think that that's just Big D democracy or something in the democratic centrism of the moment. It's more like a censorship problem that we seem to be having here that's traceable, has discernible roots, and has always been there. But I was at the crafts fair, and we were watching the video in the screening room, and part of what you see when you watch the video on the story of Pacifica and KPFA and the current struggle is that there are actually administrators who do not have a voice on the air, and apparently they don't want to have a voice on the air. Plus, they don't really want some of the people to have a voice. They don't want this to be discussed. And what do you call that? It's censorship, right?
Well, yeah, but I don't think those administrators exist here at KPFA or at WBAI. They exist in National Pacifica, and that's why we've got to change the board and the structure and the employees of National Pacifica.
How did we happen to get to that? And, you know, it is true.
It's like Bernard White was saying before. You know, we didn't pay attention, and I think his analysis is exactly correct. And I'm as guilty of this as anybody else. We thought as we were, you know, allowed to go along and do our thing and develop in directions we wanted to, whether it was musically or politically or whatever, let them play their little games on the board and have their little meetings. But their little games turned out to be power grabs. And they're destructive of everything we were trying to do. That got our attention here.
I mean, it was not just New York that was asleep at the wheel. People ascended to the board from Berkeley, from this community, from all over the country. And it is true that we attended to the business at hand, those of us who were political within the community, and didn't keep our eye on the most precious asset that the progressive community has until it's at this stage now, and hopefully not too late.
Robert Knight, what's your take on that?
Well, certainly, I think that there is a synchrony between what is happening with Pacifica nationally and what is happening at WBAI in New York this time, KPFA the time before. And that is, there are cloudy visions that come into the heads of a minority in each place, at Pacifica and here at WBAI. On the national level, this minority has visions of sugar plums and station sales in their head. And as a result, they begin to behave in ways that are quite at odds with the Pacifica mission. And the local analog of that, there are people with visions of revenge and self-advancement in their head. And they, too, begin to suffer from cloudy judgment and state things as a woman with an afternoon program here says, I do not believe that we're having a crisis with Pacifica. I do not believe Pacifica wants to change the format, the style, or the commitment, or the nature of our programming. Absurdities that are clouded by either the illusion or the image of selling stations or the image of advancement. Richard Pryor has a joke.
I hope it's clean.
That ends with the punchline, yeah, and it's deep, too. And one of the things that I think we can conclude, it has been revealed that Bessie Walsh has been having anonymous communication with person and or persons here at WBAI. We already know one department head who is such a person. She is known to have been in touch with at least one other. And it indicates an incremental quantum increase of political manipulation intelligence on the part of the Pacifica executive. It would appear, perhaps, that they have taken the advice of Epstein, Becker, and Green, Mr. Murdoch's law firm, in trying to bust a union. But I don't think they have been or will be successful in busting the unity of the staff against the federal intervention here.
What do you think, Bernard White? You go along with that?
Oh, I agree. I think, as I said, we have a major meeting planned on this coming Tuesday, and that there are a lot of things that the overwhelming majority of our staff is very clear. I think 100% of our community is very clear. But we have some people, as Robert said, who or have been clouded by their own sense of need for revenge, and they put their own personal desires up in front of everybody else, and as a result have put us in serious jeopardy. And I think that once we hear from folks who've been working directly with this, it'll be clear to everybody that they have done things that are as bad as the station manager that they're accusing the station manager of. And I think after that, we'll be able to move forward a lot more rapidly in galvanizing both the community and our listenership.
Well, we'll keep following it here on KPFA on various programs, I'm sure. Bob in San Francisco has been waiting on the phone patiently. Hi, Bob.
Hi. I was wondering if you could comment on what the Democratic Party, Big D, Clinton Gore, what's their involvement and with Mary Frances Berry and, seeing that Pacifica be shut down or quieted?
Well, I think that the government involvement, that the political party involvement certainly is, Pacifica has always been a thorn in the side of the establishment. Most recently, I think the most recent history takes us to Newt Gingrich and that entire Congress that came in when they attempted to get rid of Big Bird and failed, and then they went after Little Bird, i.e. Pacifica. And Pacifica has stood out throughout its history as, to quote Amy Goodman, the opposition to the rulers. And Mary Frances Berry and I'm sure Bill Clinton and everyone else would like not to have Pacifica, or at least WBAI and KPFA, on the air. But there are many elements here. There's the value of the stations. There is the, problem of what we air on the radio, who we criticize and how we criticize, etc. And they are involved.
Sure, gentlemen, we're going to take a brief break here. We'll come back. More phone calls. This time we're going to ask women to call, knock off the men. We do that sometimes here on Sunday Salon and KPFA. 1-800-958-9008. Let's have a gender balance. 1-800-958-9008. I'd like to remind our listeners, this is a program that is heard every week from 9 to 11 a.m., and since the political situation in Washington is what it is, I dare say we're going to be doing at least an hour this next week. Every week I try to say goodbye to it, and no more. But we can't do that yet, because the outrages may get even more outrageous. And I also want to remind our KPFA listeners that tomorrow morning at approximately 9:45, sometime between 9:45 and 10:15, we will join live the Supreme Court arguments. I'll be here anchoring that or co-anchoring it with an attorney. Try to figure out exactly what they're doing. It should be one of the liveliest and most intense moments in the history of the United States Supreme Court, as many of them seemingly have already judged this issue on both sides, and it's a battle for the mind and soul, as we were saying during the first hour, of Sandra Day O'Connor, such as it is, and maybe Anthony Kennedy as well. Try to see if they'll let the ballot counting go forward in Florida. So far it doesn't look good for that ballot counting to go forward, but we'll see, and we'll have that on the air on KPFA as soon as the Supreme Court has released the tape, which they will probably do shortly after their session finishes at 9:30 or so tomorrow morning, our time. They turn it around. CBS is the anchor network, and they've kindly allowed us to use their audio in the past. We'll try to arrange for it tomorrow as well in the absence of a functioning National Pacifica network, which we're desperately trying, as you hear during this hour, to restore. We're doing what we can to serve our listeners' needs here at KPFA and WBAI. So tune in tomorrow morning at about sometime between, tune in all morning, but especially to hear that historic Supreme Court argument and our analysis of it. We will start that at sometime probably around 9:45, 10:00, 10:15, as soon as the tape is released, and continue with the oral arguments in their entirety, uninterrupted. And then afterward, we'll have analysis and possibly phone-ins from you, our listeners, here at 94.1 FM. KPFA, listener-sponsored radio in Berkeley. We'll be right back with more of your phone calls. Again, we'd like to encourage our women callers, 1-800-958-9008. And the local number, just in area code 510, is 848-4425. 848-4425, if you are concerned or have questions about the Pacifica situation here in New York or any place else. Stay tuned. We're back with our final segment this morning here on Sunday Salon, talking this hour about the Pacifica situation, continually difficult, if not dire. Our guests in New York are Robert Knight of the News Department, Bernard White, the Program Director, and here in the studio, Sherry Gendelman of our KPFA Local Advisory Board, the Chair. Deja in San Francisco, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, I had a comment to make about the similarity between the corporatization and privatization going on with KPFA and the similar efforts to corporatize and privatize the San Francisco Public Library. And I had a question and related to that, which is has to do with how the board is appointed, because at the library a lot of the problem comes from the decision makers up at the top that there isn't direct control over.
Hi, Deja. I think I remember you from the Grey Panthers days.
Right.
The way the board currently is appointed is it self-appoints itself. They have expanded the number of at-large delegates, reduced the number of people who come through the local advisory board process, in fact, eliminated those people as of February 28, 1999, when they, in the opinion of our lawsuit, illegally amended the bylaws that govern the Pacifica Foundation to exclude from participation the local advisory board in its selection of members to the governing board. So now it is a self-perpetuating, self-appointed board. That's how we got to where we are today. But there are several lawsuits challenging those illegal processes.
Carol in Santa Rosa, thanks for joining us on Sunday Salon.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Sherry.
Hi.
I wanted to just very briefly get in and correct one thing. It's not a minority of the Pacifica board at this point that has clouded judgment. It's a two-thirds majority.
No, he was saying a minority of the staff at WBAI. I think you misheard him.
Oh, I maybe did.
Is this Carol Spooner?
Yeah, it's Carol Spooner.
Hi, Carol,
but
author of the eponymous Spooner suit.
I do want to emphasize the seriousness, as Sherry just pointed out, of our self-selected board. Through these illegal measures, we now have a two-thirds majority of the Pacifica board that votes in lockstep. Isn't that right, Sherry? You've been there.
It is. There is some interesting activity from one of the members from Texas, but yes, that's true. We are the forces of good, or in the minority at the moment, but... But, you know, we have many lawsuits going on, and we have a what appears to be a groundswell of activity on both coasts. And the center, I guess, which voted for Bush, needs to be awakened to the rightness of our position. I also want to add here one thing that I failed to mention before, and which I think is critical in response to one of the previous callers' questions. Another government organization that has been doing the bidding of the corporatists and the Democratic and Republicans is the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Yeah.
And they have really been behind the scenes, but directing the course of dismantling Pacifica as we have known it and as it has existed for the last 50 years, trying to turn us into an alternative to public radio. And I want all of our listeners here, and for those people in New York as well, to get on the phone to Rick Madden, who is in charge of the radio division of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and tell him to butt out of our politics.
Bernard White, what about this? The Corporation for Public Broadcasting gives us about 10% of our budget. It is, I think, the last time I looked, which would be almost $1 million now. It's my contention, and always has been, and I was station manager here in the mid-1970s when we agreed to take CPB money, and it was my contention then, we'll take it as long as there are no strings attached, and there weren't. Now there are, and I say, take your money and put it where the sun don't shine. We can easily raise that money on our air if we just tell our listeners we're not going to have our strings jerked anymore by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a governmental body in Washington that wants to influence our programming. Now, do you agree with me that WBAI could replace that money on the air as well without too much trouble if we told listeners what was going on?
Oh, I think we can, and I have a story about that. We did a report here one Saturday on the Palestinians' right of return demonstration that took place in Washington, D.C., and I was confronted at a program directors meeting out in San Diego by the national program director as to why we put that program on the air.
Our national program director, Steve Yasko.
Yes, Stephen Yasko. And this kind of questioning, as far as I'm concerned, has never gone on. The reason why he did it is because he said that Rick Madden had contacted Bessie Wash with a complaint about the program. And I told him, we do this kind of thing all the time. We have a community that's interested in this issue, and we cover marches all the time. So he asked me, have we got things like, have we gotten any money for it? And, you know, I told him, we don't do things for money. We do it to educate our listeners. And, you know, he just did this kind of, so it already has happened.
It's absolutely.
Reaching into the station, trying to intimidate people about the kinds of programs that we're doing.
Right. Bernard, you know, the original, I mean, I'm sure that Rick Madden interceded in that because WBAI and KPFA give voice to the other side of the struggle in the Middle East, namely the Palestinians.
Right. It was Madden who called him.
Right. But Madden, after people began to call him and say, how dare you, complain about that, then came up with the theory that maybe WBAI received money, were paid to cover this thing. So it was slander by innuendo as well, when actually the person that was violating the free speech of our radio stations was Rick Madden, attempting to manipulate the news.
And of course, our board, had it been the kind of board that it needs to be and should be and for many years was, would have called up an outrage and said, cape off of us, and called our political allies in Washington and said, look what's happening to us. But in fact, our board is going to destroy us now. And that's why we've got to get rid of that board. Nothing's going to change till that happens. We have three lawsuits pending, one by, as Sherry was saying, Sherry and others who are representing the local advisory boards. One, the Carol Spooner suit on behalf of thousands of listeners, and one on behalf of members of the National Board who feel that the procedures have not been followed and unethical and illegal things have been done.
Not to mention Larry Bensky's lawsuit for having been illegally terminated from this radio station because he, too, chose to support our struggle.
I didn't want to mention that one too much, but it's crawling through the courts. Pacific is doing all it can to stall it. And
you should have filed it in Florida, Larry.
I
would have gone right to the Supreme Court.
I should have hired Antonin Scalia as my lawyer. Bernard White and Robert Knight, thank you both very much for joining us. We'll keep in touch and keep broadcasting about this.
Thank you. It's great to be in your salon.
Okay.
It's great to have you guys with us.
This is Sunday Salon. Jerry Gendelman, thanks to you, too. Thanks to our producer, Sheila Coy, and our engineer, Andrea Duflon. That phone number about supporting the Pacifica Stringer strike, once again, if you want information, 718-707-7189.